I'll go ahead and call us to order this Tuesday, February 18th, for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors. If we could do the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is a public comment period for the public to address topics on today's agenda. See anybody moving to the mic? Consideration of the minutes for 2/11/14.
So moved.
Second.
A motion, a second. Any corrections or additions? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Minutes are approved. Personnel actions. Looks like they're all in order there.
Move approval as submitted.
And I will second. Was that slow enough, Shelley?
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye.
Are you keeping up with Shelley? Okay.
The computer, not me typing.
Okay.
I don't know. I think you're out of practice. Week in Mexico, you get a little...
Okay, the consent agenda. It looks like all items are as listed on the consent agenda.
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. No public hearing items. Takes us down to additional items.
Okay.
Consideration of submitting proposed FY15 budget to publication and setting public hearing for March 11th, 2014 at 7 o'clock p.m. Lisa Markley.
A Tuesday morning that starts with Markley is always a good Tuesday morning. Absolutely.
I think so. All right. You have the preliminary, and I call it still the preliminary because the handback meeting is this afternoon for everybody to go over and make sure that I didn't get fat fingers or there isn't something blatantly missing in the budget. So after that meeting, I will finalize, make sure you guys get a copy of it before I send it, but it's pretty much, the rates aren't going to change, so I guess that's probably good news. I will send it on 220. It will be published on 228 in all three papers. That is 11 days before the public hearing, and the requirement is 10 to 20. So, budget that we're proposing has total revenues of $42.2 million and total expenditures of $40.7 million, which is $1.4 million more in revenues than expenditures. The published levy rate for urban or countywide is $5.39. And rural is $8.57. That is 11 cents lower than the current year, and it is also the lowest rate since the 2004-2005 budget year. We can lower the rate after the publication, but we cannot raise it, and we can lower expenditures after the publication, but we cannot raise them. The budget proposal has an overall tax askings of $228,000 less than FY14. The ending fund balances that are in this budget are the general supplemental is 22.2, the mental health and or county services fund, which it is officially called now, is 171%. The rural is 11.4 and secondary roads is 25.1. This includes a new IT position, and it includes a new conservation position, and it includes funding for a telecommunicator position that you approved in this fiscal year. It also includes a 2% across the board increase for salaries and the recommendation of the compensation board, which you will move on the night of the hearing. The ending fund balances could change slightly. Like I said, the rates aren't going to change, but the ending fund balances could if there are adjustments after I hand the budgets back this afternoon. So, with all that said, what I would like now is just to get your approval to send it to publication once we finalize it.
I would move that we approve sending the FY15 budget to for public notice. And I believe the dates have been mentioned earlier for February 20th. And then on the 28th, it would be published, I believe, was the information received.
Go ahead and set.
And set the public hearing date for March 11th, 2014.
At 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Oh, yeah.
And I will second that motion, and I have just a couple comments, if you don't mind, before we vote on it. I know that shocks you that I might want to actually comment on the budget. Lisa, I want to publicly thank you. This was far and away the smoothest budget process since I've been paying attention, definitely since I've been sitting here on the Board of Supervisors. Wayne and Paul, just a couple quick things to point out to you guys. When the three of us first sat down here together and started talking budgets, at that point, Story County had budgeted to spend $1.18 for every dollar of revenue that was budgeted. This year, what we are publishing, what we are discussing publishing, spends 96 cents of every dollar of revenue we have coming in. Lisa mentioned the countywide levy rate. That was $5.82 when we first sat down together. It's now $5.38 with this budget. When we sat down together, we had a budget that had $6,378,600 more in expenses than revenues. Some people would call that a deficit budget. We now show $1,398,083 of surplus. That is outstanding. Other thing I would really like to point out is, for the first time in a long time, Lisa, maybe you don't know this number off the top of your head, but for the first time in a long time, actual tax askings, property taxes from the people of Story County are going down. I think that is outstanding. Not only the levy rate going down, but the actual dollars coming in is going down. So I'm really, really proud of the work that we've done, the work that the staff has done. It was an unbelievably good budget process, and I just think everybody should be commended.
Yeah, and I think you're correct, and I'm sure not all of our staff will obviously listen to the board proceeding. Some do, but Mr. Chair, I would ask that you maybe follow up with just a little bit of a thank you when it's appropriate, when you think it's appropriate, so that the staff recognizes how much that we valued all of their input in the whole budgeting process. It is truly have been a team effort, and they bought into our vision, and I think it is a reflection of just sound budgeting practice. So please feel free to do that on behalf of us when you feel it's appropriate.
Or this afternoon when you meet with them.
When you meet them.
Exactly.
Exactly. Okay, we have a motion and a second to set the public hearing for the budget on March 11th at 7 p.m. in this room. I think Clinton made the motion, so Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The hearing is set for March 11th at 7 p.m. Thanks, Lisa.
Good job, Markley.
Next is consideration of additional insurance coverage for cyber breach and fiber optic damage. Steve Goodhue, I see he's not here this morning.
Presented to us last week.
Right.
For discussion last week. I think this is just the same thing that we had in front of us. I know it answered my questions. I think this is the reality of the age we live in. And so I'm going to move... approval of the additional insurance coverage for cyber breach and fiber optic cable damage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I've got a little bit further. I've spoken with both the facilities director and the IT director. I think the conversation I had with Cal was basically, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but this covers our own fiber. If our employees cut through our own fiber at some point, and because we've already got coverage if we cut somebody else's fiber. Cal's stance was that he couldn't think of any occasion where his staff would be in a position to cut our own fiber. Really, he says, if it's not a shovel or a garden tiller, if it's anything deeper than that, we have a contractor that comes in and does it. So, but for the amount of coverage, I think we're probably it's money well spent in the event that something does.
Well, and I'm more worried about
accidents can
roads.
Happen. I mean, it can happen.
Than I was about facilities
right.
in this
right.
case.
Right.
And like
right.
Wayne says, accidents
right.
can happen, and,
right.
and we just address it. The reality is that, Wayne, 5 or 6 years ago, Story County didn't own
right.
fiber optic cable,
yeah.
but we own a substantial amount, now, and
right.
it just makes sense to me that if you're going to own something, you at least recognize that something could go wrong, and how are you going to pay for it? And so either we're going to do this or we're going to self-insure.
Right.
Either way, we got to recognize
yep.
those dollars.
Yep.
So we've got our motion and a second, and we've had our discussion. So, Mr. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. We've approved the additional coverage for fiber optic and the cyber breach.
And Paul, thanks for visiting with Cal and Barb
sure.
on that.
Next, a discussion and consideration. Well, there's the treasurer. For a proposal submitted by IDM for our vision project, process online and planning proposal. Leanne Harder.
Hey, Leanne.
I believe the proposal from IDM was placed on the agenda as an attachment. I mean, just quickly summarize and then answer any questions you may have. The board will recall this being an ongoing discussion we've been having with IDM. It really does kick off the comprehensive planning process that we're looking over the next 18 to 20 months. The proposal outlines a process wherein IDM would come in and help us by facilitating and designing visioning sessions for Story County. It would include a review of the assessments, trends, and stakeholder questionnaire. The questionnaire is being developed by staff, and we will be distributing it by staff, but they would then, prior to us distributing it, they would review and make sure that it's a solid questionnaire. A report on to the previous strategic planning team regarding the accomplishments, identifying vision and shared values and for the next 10 years, and then countywide shared vision statement and set of values. It's a total price of $6,400. It's $6,000, but they do ask for $400 for travel. It would begin yet this month and then be done by the end of April. And we have tentatively set two dates for the stakeholder meetings, March 31st and April 21st. And we'll solidify those if the contract or the agreement is approved. I did send it to Jessica Reynolds, the assistant county attorney, and she didn't have any issues. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
I've gotten a couple questions of why we wouldn't just do this in-house, and my answer is simple enough. One, we have plenty on our planning and development staff's plate, and two, this is not Story County government's visioning exercise. This is Story County visioning exercise, and it makes perfect sense to me that we bring in a third party to administer and moderate those conversations and make sure that we're headed in a direction that's beneficial to the whole county. So I'm supportive of this.
I did fail to mention this is the project, too, that ISAC it will contribute up to a third of the cost for reimbursement.
So I'll move approval of the proposal as submitted by IDM.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the proposal by IDM for a vision project. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye.
And Wayne, would you please express our gratitude to ISAC for their willingness to participate in this with
Will
us?
Will do. I noticed they just recently sent out RFPs for other counties that, you know, wanted to get involved in the process. So I don't know if they've received any others yet, but I'll find that out tomorrow when we have our ISAC board meeting. So, but yes, I'll be certainly willing to do that.
Okay, next, consideration of building code feasibility study. Leanne Harder.
This is just the slides I have are simply a repeat of the presentation Keith Morgan and I gave a couple weeks ago. You'll need to turn those down. I think they're visible. Thanks, Shelley. Just quickly, again, this is a mitigation project activity that is identified in the hazard, multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan. The idea being the feasibility study to study the value of adoption and enforcement of building codes to include construction buildings to withstand a natural disaster. I'm not going to go over this, the ideas for implementation, but the timeline. Feasibility study would be from July 2014 through December 2014, and that's why it's on our planning development calendar year work program. When presented a couple weeks ago, the topic, it was just simply discussion, so the board asked me to bring it back for consideration so you could give some direction to staff. And I'll be glad to answer any specific questions. Again, it's a building code feasibility study.
This will be conducted by your staff.
It'll be conducted by our staff. We did ask for funding, though, to in the fiscal year 15 budget. Yeah. I don't think those were included, though.
And what of that would need to be spent as part of the feasibility study? So we got two components in FY15. We got the proposed feasibility study, and then we've got the steering committee. So the funds that we've talked about budgeting, where would those be spent?
Towards the feasibility study, to bring in a consultant to actually conduct the feasibility study rather than staff. It could be done by staff. And I think I introduced that or gave the board an example of a feasibility study done in Illinois that we would model and use as our template. And so staff could do. It's just an overarching question. Is this a direction that you want staff to go in and include it on our – and keep it on our work program? And on that note, there are changes to work program anyway that will be coming back to you next week. So that was the timeliness of this in relation to the budget.
Well, just on the overview side of this, I mean, this is, we've talked about this back and forth over a number of years, just the whole concept of building codes and whether or not this is a direction we want to go. I know we've had in previous years some strong opinions from the county attorney's office regarding the enforceability of something like this and whether or not this is a thing to do. But I think in view of what we've had from Chief Morgan and Leanne and what we're reading about and learning about from other counties that have gone through disaster recovery and other types of things, construction of buildings and so forth certainly is one of the things that governments need to at least be looking at in terms of whether there are things or steps that they want to take to not necessarily mandate, but make strong recommendations and suggestions about where you build certain things, certain structures, and what quality some of those structures should have. And so I think it's something that it just shows our visioning process and thought process of trying to make sure that we can put in the hands of the people, the residents of Story County, all the necessary bits of information for long-term sustainability as we move forward. So
I struggle. Wayne, I agree with what you said, but I really struggle with what I am going to learn from the feasibility study that would either be conducted by Leanne and her staff or conducted by a third-party vendor that we bring in to do it, what I would learn that would sway me to support building codes for Story County, which I don't support right now. And my issue is, if I can't find a reasonable pathway for me to support this, then why would I encourage us to waste time and money going down and looking for something that I think won't answer the question? Now, that doesn't answer the question for the two of you. You may find a very clear path where you could get to supporting building codes for Story County. I'm struggling to find one, and so that's where I am.
I struggle with this myself, and the statement has been made that why would we support something on the front end when the likelihood of it ever being passing this board would be?
Well, my point would be, again, we need to come back and have a discussion with the county attorney's office. I mean, you guys need to hear some of the concerns that he's expressed that I've had the privilege of hearing over the number of years. At that time, there was no directive on our part to move forward with actually establishing that. But I do think that there are other things happening that municipalities need to at least consider. The question is the dollars that is being proposed going to give us the kind of information to decide whether we stay the course as we're currently operating, or do we come up with some possible suggested things that we would encourage the builders and particularly homeowners to consider when they are proposing building in certain areas. So again, I'm not in favor of some type of mandate, but I'm also in favor of us trying to make sure that we have as much information that we possibly can. So I'm a little lukewarm in terms of what we're going to get out of this, but I do know that if we go back and analyze what we've done through our visioning and strategic planning and all the things that is done up there, that until we've gone through that process, we didn't have a clear understanding of the direction that we wanted to go. So I think this is consistent, though, with our long-term planning goals. The question would be, as you say, will it be beneficial? My point would be is, let's say that we're not convinced as the three of us, but would there be enough information that future boards might want to consider as they move forward? I don't know that yet.
Yeah, and I think that you make a great point. My issue is I and we have put a lot on the plate of planning and development. And they have stepped up to every challenge we've issued them, have really done an exemplary job. I don't see why we would have something on their work program that does not seem to have any immediate legs. And so I'm going to suggest that if we want to keep this on our agenda, the first thing we need to do is refer it to the county attorney, because, Wayne, you bring up a great point. Paul and I have not had an opportunity to hear Stephen's thoughts on this, and in my mind, I'm already reluctant to go down the road of building codes. But if our county attorney was to say to me, I don't believe this is enforceable, I don't think that this is something that the county attorney's office is going to have a whole lot of interest in, then that's just going to affirm for me again that this is not a rabbit hole that we need to ask Leanne and her staff to spend any time on. Whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, if it's not practicable, why would you want to go down that path and spend time on it?
Well, I sit here and I think about the discussions that we've had with the county attorney's office when it comes to zoning enforcement regulations and the conversations that I've had as the chair of the Board of Health with environmental health violations. And this would simply be one more layer. Unless I'm mistaken, I don't believe there's anybody in your office that's qualified to go out and conduct building code inspections.
And that would be part of the feasibility study to determine what the staffing requirements and...
Treasurer Tweet's just itching to do this.
And currently, we don't have anyone qualified to do it. Not saying that anyone couldn't get qualified and pass all the exams. We don't have the staff to do it.
I know where I'm going to come down on this. I've built a house in the unincorporated area, and I think a lot of it comes back to personal responsibility. If you want your brother-in-law Bubba to come out and wire and plumb your house, if you don't have building codes, then that's between you and your mortgage lender. But I know when I built my house 20 years ago that I had to, or the mortgage lender had to see the journeyman tickets from everybody that worked on my house, even though we didn't have local zoning ordinances. Everything in my house went into my house was to whatever the national building code is at the time. And I think just one more layer on a local level to have somebody have to go through in order to build a house, I'm not going to be able to support it on this end or on the other end. So,
is there, Lynn? Is there other communities, either Midwest or throughout the country, that have gone through this process? I do know that there are some communities that do have some building codes, but I don't know very much about the state of Iowa.
I don't have the current number of counties that have building codes off the top of my head, but there are definitely larger, more urban counties such as Polk and Johnson and Lynn and I think Scott County or Dubuque County, one of those two have building codes. And there's also some more rural counties, substantially smaller than Story County, that have building codes. But that would that's part of what the feasibility study would do, is look at peer counties, who has it, who doesn't, the process they went through, what their fees are, everything, the whole gamut. But definitely majority of communities, cities in Iowa do have building codes. And whether they have just adopted the state building code or if they've adopted what's called the I-codes, the international building codes, that I couldn't tell you.
Well, in previous years, we used to get documentation about the international building codes that a lot of them were following. And very few communities actually took the step to have more stringent enforcement at that time. And I guess that, I mean, I don't have enough information to make a rational conclusion that this is something we ought to do or not do, but I don't want to spend a lot of dollars if it's not going to go anywhere either. So I'm struggling with how do we get any additional information to determine whether this is something we want to keep on the front burners.
I can tell you this time, if it remains on our work program and your direction today is to go ahead and do a building code feasibility study, it will be a staff completed feasibility study. No funds have been placed in next fiscal year
right.
budget.
Yep.
And I think it definitely is too late to add funds and have that process truly vetted. So it would be a staff driven initiative or staff completed study.
In order to get us completion, I will move approval of a building code feasibility study.
I'm not sure if I want a second it or not. I struggle with this one. I don't know if I have enough information yet, but I will second it for the likelihood of gaining some additional information. But I'm not sure where it's going to go take us. So I'm this a reluctant second. For the sake of learning more information.
It was a reluctant second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to conduct our building code feasibility study.
It'll be done in-house.
In-house by planning and development staff. Sanders.
No.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. No. So there you go. Thank you, Leanne.
Leanne, thanks.
Next, consideration of decommissioning plans and agreement for Optimum Wind Renewables, LLC. Leanne Harder.
Bad penny that doesn't go away. this is the first time this current board has seen a decommissioning plan and agreement. Optimum Wind Renewables, LLC is a firm out of Des Moines that has been through the process of the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment to receive approval on 3 conditional use permits for placement of, I think, 7 to 9 wind turbines in Palestine Township and then just west of Nevada here between Ames and Nevada and then just northeast of Nevada, just northeast of the cell tower over there. A condition of approval on all 3 of these conditional use permits placed on the Board of Adjustment was that decommissioning plans and agreements and associated escrow accounts be established. Certain period of time following the approval of the conditional use permit. Through several iterations of the decommissioning agreement, Jessica and I developed this plan and agreement, sent it to the applicant in this case, and they made some changes to what were agreed to by Jessica as well. And the next step is your signature on these agreements or the board chair signature. Beyond that, once they've achieved the completion date, which is specified in the agreement itself, they'll have to actually establish the escrow agreements and put the financing mechanisms in place, working with Jessica Reynolds in the county attorney's office. When we approach these, we can do it in 2 fashions. One, we could do a parcel-by-parcel basis, or in this case, the applicant has asked that be on per turbine basis because there's separate LLC for each turbine from a financing standpoint. That's why you have so many agreements in front of you. And probably after this one, they may go on the consent agenda. if there are no issues.
And this is what the county enacted something similar on the original 123 that went up. Is that right?
Not to this degree.
Not to this degree.
Not with the financing mechanism that is in place.
Okay, and this is guaranteeing, as I read this, that there'll be $125,000 there. In the event they were just abandoned, there would still be $125,000 there to take care of the removal and putting it back like it was. And as I recall, the basics of Wayne of what you guys instituted with the 123 was making sure that there were dollars there to take it back if they were ever abandoned. I'm happy that we've got something very specific here, and I commend you and Jessica and Stephen Holmes on putting this together. I think it's the right way to go.
We were one of the first counties to actually venture into this. The concept of decommissioning, understanding when the original 120 went up, what may happen 50 years down the road and whose the responsibility was. And I think as a result of that, a lot of other counties began to follow suit as other turbines came on board. But I think this one, as Leanne has alluded to, now does have some specific cost figures, I think, and I don't know if we actually had that before the last time around.
These agreements will be tailored for each type of project, especially given that different turbines will have different lifespans.
Right.
In this case, I believe it's a 25-year lifespan. Some have 30, some have 20, and we'll be able to specify that and then break down the implementation of the escrow account to match the lifespan of the turbine.
Well, wherever you come down on wind energy and the turbines, and there's several different schools of thought. I think we can all agree that ultimately, 25, 50 years down the road, we don't want to end up with a bunch of abandoned fingers sticking out of the ground. And so I just think there's great foresight here. And again, Leanne, I commend you on this, and I will move approval of these decommissioning plans.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The plans have been approved. Thanks, Leanne.
One for two today. Pretty good day.
Agency report.
Two for three? That's even better.
Center for Creative Justice. Agency report. Mark Kubik. Morning, Mark.
Morning.
Man walked in this morning without a jacket on.
Mark, how you doing?
Well.
Good.
Thanks for having me. CCJ was founded all the way back in 1974. We are the only nonprofit agency offering probation services in Story County. In fact, we're the only one of our kind in the state of Iowa. And to the best of my knowledge, we are the oldest privatized probation agency in the entire nation. Probation accomplishes two goals. One is rehabilitation, and the other is public safety. Assigning a client to probation allows that client to remain part of their family. They can continue employment and otherwise remain a productive member of our community. And I think we are all better off having these citizens as taxpayers instead of a tax burden. The alternative to probation is simply paying a fine or serving a jail sentence. This option offers little rehabilitative effort and absolutely no supervision. Probation officers hold the client accountable for their actions while helping the client identify needed areas of change. Our clients are ordered to many types of programming, and that includes substance abuse evaluation and treatment, drinking driver schools, mental health evaluations and treatment, anger management, batterers education programs, and parenting classes. In addition, our probation officers help clients secure resources such as employment. The courts represent our communities, and the Story County courts continue to see CCJ as a valuable sentencing option. We are currently handling about 76% of the caseload assigned by the Story County courts. The remaining 24% are going to the Department of Correctional Services. And DCS typically only receives offenders that have committed a very serious or violent crime or have a long criminal history. Our current caseload is 702 clients, so we're certainly staying very busy. Our outcomes remain very strong. Our success rate historically has been between 80 and 90% of our clients successfully complete their probation. And probably a stronger number is recidivism. Historically, between 85 and 90% of our clients do not reoffend after their successful completion, and that affects everyone in the community. In calendar year 2013, 97% of our clients that were required to obtain a substance abuse evaluation did. 88% of our clients that were required to complete substance abuse treatment did so. 93% of our clients that were required to complete a drinking driver's school completed that course. 78% of the clients that were required to obtain a mental health evaluation did obtain that. 4% of the clients that were required to complete mental health treatment did so. 75% of our clients that were required to complete the batterer's education program did complete that. And 80% of our clients that were required to complete anger management because of some type of assaultive behavior did complete that course. In the last fiscal year, our agency supervised the repayment of over $1 million in court costs. That's a record high for our agency. And I would just point out that's nearly three times our agency's budget. Probation is very cost effective with CCJ. It costs over $30,000 a year to house a person in a county jail or a prison. And that is paid for by taxpayers. A one-year probation at CCJ can be handled for as little as $300. So if you do the math, you find out that probation is 1% the cost of incarceration. In summary, every client at CCJ is a person. They're a person that lives right here in our communities. And I kind of feel that every client assigned to our agency is a reinvestment of sorts. I'm proud to work at CCJ, and I hope that you're proud to support our efforts. And I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Mark, we're really appreciative of the work you do.
Very much so. Yeah, and I think quite often a lot of folks don't realize the number of clients that you do see, and they come from all walks of life. I know the recidivism rate that you mentioned is a testament to the work of you and your staff. And I think it has enabled these individuals to continue to be very productive in our community. So, job well done.
Thanks.
Next, departmental reports, Conservation Mike Cox.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Yep.
Well, we're trying to keep people from going to Center for Creative Justice. One of the things that, ironically, this winter being some near record cold, we've had some opportunities to get some kids outside and enjoy winter. And in particularly, we've done a lot more ice fishing programs this year. And we've had numerous classrooms, 4-H groups out to fish on the ice. We've got probably more ice this year than we've had for quite some time. And it's allowed us to do a lot more. So some of those have been so successful that some of the classes then have come back and gone to other events. We just co-sponsored the trout stocking event with DNR at Ada Hayden. And the light's on. And there were probably, it's estimated about 200 to 300 people in attendance, and so it was really, really well attended. Tremendous turnout for it. So our EE program's been busy with those kinds of things, in addition to all the classroom programs that we're doing. One thing that's been in the news a lot, I'm sure you're aware, that is the emerald ash borer disease that's spreading throughout the state. Starting in eastern Iowa and gradually progressing westward. The state did just issue a statewide quarantine importation of firewood or transport of firewood and ash-related products. That was just issued within the last few weeks. And at the last Conservation Board meeting, the board issued a firewood ban effective in county-owned areas, i.e. Our campgrounds. We're not allowing importation of any firewood that comes from outside the county. Local firewood is still allowable. But anything that comes from outside the county does need to be labeled as far as the source, so the origin, and species. So we expect that this is going to continue to be an issue. We are doing an inventory of trees in kind of sensitive areas like Hickory Grove Campground, to be specific. Ash, we have a very high population of ash. I'm sure you've seen in the news lots of communities moving forward with just taking ash trees out. We really don't think that's in the best interest of the county to move a project like that. There will be some natural resistance developed, we anticipate, similar to other diseases that have come through in the past. And if we have highly susceptible trees that might be hazard trees, we'll have to look at those on a case-by-case and ensure we probably will have some more trees that we will be taking out. But we're not doing a preventative ash removal at this time. Other work, finally now all of our project worksheets with FEMA are complete, and so all of our work from the flood, or all of our damages from the flood of last year, have now been given the green light to move forward with FEMA funding. So that's taken quite some time, so we expect that all of the work that will go with that will happen this summer. And some of that's represented, and you guys are aware of that, in the FY15 budget. Hickory Grove, I want to chat about a little bit. I mentioned the ice thickness. For several years, we've been waiting for ice to get at least 16 inches thick so that we can do some revetment work or shoreline stabilization work. We did receive a grant from DNR to do some work on some sensitive shorelines at Hickory Grove that are highly erosive. And so with this ice, we were able to get that work done. So that was all completed last week. And we hauled, give or take, 400 tons of revetment across the lake onto the shoreline below the primitive camping area, if you're familiar with where that is. So that was a big project, and glad to have that completed. So we had about 20 inches of ice out there on the lake. So that all went well. And speaking of Hickory, I believe the board has heard me as well address the watershed project at Hickory Grove. The lake, as you know, is listed as an impaired water body on the state's impaired water body list. We know why it's impaired, and we have now an action plan for addressing that, as well as the erosion problem that's happening at the lake. You've heard me say before that east retention basin, so the east bay of the lake, there's only 4 feet of water in there right now. It's a significant sedimentation into that east basin. Thus far, the road and the tubes there have prevented a lot of that sedimentation from reaching the main lake. But at any rate, we know we need to address that. The plan of action that has now been adopted, approved by the DNR, addresses the causes of the bacterial impairment as well as sedimentation, and really outlines the scope of work for how we move forward with that. So having all of that done now, we are at a very receptive time with the state to acquire some funding to move those projects forward. So you'll be hearing me talk more about this in the coming months as well. So we are applying for a right now. The first step here is to identify the priority projects of those scope that scope of work and what needs to be completed first. We've done that. We're going to be applying for a grant to fund that work. Significant portion of the grant is going to come from both IDOLS and from DNR, as well as some other sources that we'll chat about later.
And I'd just like to step in there. Mike, I'm appreciative that you're bringing this to us. In my mind, this is something that we've discussed pretty regularly. Margaret has some money in her budget, I know, in the Board of Health to help address some of this area. I just think we need to start to recognize that while there's a great grant opportunity out there and we need to actively seek all those outside source of revenue, there's going to come a point that the three of us are going to have to commit to putting some dollars into getting this thing straightened out. And, Mike, I'm appreciative that you're working on it.
Yeah, I think that it's without jinxing our process here, all of our ducks are in a row for moving forward and getting some outside funding to leverage getting this work done. So I think we're in a tremendously strong position to really get the lake problems addressed. So very, very fortunate to be in that situation. Another project at Hickory right now. You've heard us talk about this as well, but the sewer project that we need to we know we need to essentially get a new sewer system at Hickory, and so I've had some communications with Central Iowa Water, and we're in the early stages of discussing Central Iowa Water's role in helping us to address this, and it might mean that we have less capital outlay to get a new system there. So that's something that we're discussing with Central Iowa Water, and with the goal of having a plan adopted and being able to construct the new system in 15. So we'll spend this year designing it and then construct it in 15. And then Dakins, you've awarded the contract for that. There's been a pre-construction meeting has been set for March 5th. And then in addition to that, so I expect the contractor is going to get on board very rapidly here and get started. In addition to that, the community has been very active in some fundraising for fish stocking in the lake. And so they're actually having a fundraiser on April 5th, and they're going to do some raffles, some auctions, and proceeds of that are going to go to the fish fund, which, again, the fish fund is it's a public-private partnership to get the fishery at the new lake, get it to a size that's catchable, if you will, a couple years sooner than if it was just a public-funded project alone with DNR. So we'll get some bigger fish in there and get a little different mix in there. And the community really is really appreciative of that, one thing we heard early on with that project. So it's about a $10,000 goal, and I think that we're probably at give or take $4,000 right now with the fund.
And you said that's April 5th?
April 5th, yep.
Keep us updated on that, so hopefully we can have some representation up there.
And the only other thing I wanted to mention, again, a long-standing project that we've had is acquisition of some Army Corps of Engineers land along the old, I-35 corridor that did not get constructed. We're still moving forward with that. We're still in discussions with Representative King's office and hoping that we can have some resolution again fairly soon. We seem to have a little bit of renewed support for getting this moved forward, so hopefully we can get to the end of this pretty quickly. So, and that's all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, great job.
Well, that takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meetings.
Passed with the holiday. Didn't have a meeting yesterday.
Good meeting Thursday with Farm Bureau. Lisa Markley, Darren Moon, and I attended that and had a really nice presentation and always appreciative of our friends in Farm Bureau.
I'll pass. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. I don't see anybody moving to the mics. Announcements from the supervisors.
Just to say that I will be out of the office tomorrow and Thursday attending the ISAC Board of Directors meeting. We have a two-day meeting scheduled for the next couple days.
Pass.
I'll pass. That takes us to adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Turned.